Cloudy, cold one tonight, 27 overnight low, and the good news, it'll be warming up by the weekend to the low 50s in some areas. Let's go to line number two right now. Welcome one of our regulars, Ed Witkin, who heads the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Ed, welcome back to the broadcast.
How are you?
Sounds like you got a little pep in your step today, huh?
well, you know, I think it was a pretty incredible evening election night, and working people won, I'd say. I'd say the politics of sort of slashing and burning the middle class was resoundingly rejected.
Yeah, it certainly was. I could tell the last couple of segments we did with you, you were really concerned, as we should have been. I mean, Romney came on really strong. They had a whole lot of money, but it didn't work, did it?
No, it didn't work. And, you know, if you think about it, this, even though all elections are about jobs and the economy, this one really was a incredibly stark contrast between two very different visions. And as you alluded to a minute ago, when you can flood the airwaves with literally unlimited sums of money to try to repackage, rebrand your candidate and attack the other candidate running for president, yeah, you can sometimes steal elections. But the good news, perhaps one of the best pieces of news, is that the Koch brothers, the Karl Roves of the world that literally thought they could buy this election, they failed miserably, and they spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly good that it's all over with, and now they're trying to work together to avoid this so-called fiscal cliff. I'd like to hear your opinion on this, Ed, because I know where Labor is. Labor met with Obama shortly. Were you part of that meeting, by the way?
No, I was not. No, it was actually only four labor leaders were in that room. It was Rich Trumka, Lee Saunders of AFSCME, Mary Kay Henry of SEIU, and Dennis Van Roekel of the NEA, the National Education Association. So, no.
Well,
I was not there.
I would imagine the opinion of organized labor has been, hey, don't cut Social Security and Medicare. I mean, Social Security did not add to the deficit. Similar reaction from you as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're really pushing hard on this idea that we should be focused on jobs, not austerity. Austerity is literally ruining the European economy. And meanwhile, our economy, while it is still in growth mode, it is only growing at a slow rate. And, you know, as Rich Trumka, I think, has said accurately, this whole crisis is on entitlements is really manufactured. The Social Security Trust Fund is flush for many more years. The ability to deal with Medicare is one that is predicated on having the resources to pay for public health programs. And the way you do that is not to give tax breaks to the super rich. And so, I'm completely in that camp, although we add one more important voice to this, which is we're worried that all these important discretionary programs that support transportation investments could be harmed in a bad fiscal cliff deal. And so we're focused like a laser to make sure that transportation is part of the future of rebuilding this economy, not, you know, this sort of silly, overdone austerity stuff.
Yeah.
So that's our focus right now.
You really can't cut your way to progress now, can you?
No, you can't. And the voters rejected that. That's the thing that I think can't be lost in these fiscal cliff talks. They rejected, for example, 50% cuts in transportation. That was one of many things that Mitt Romney was for. And if you look at the polling, Americans overwhelmingly are tired of long lines at airports, or tired of ridiculous congestion on our highways. They're tired of reading about unsafe bridges. And frankly, they're tired as business people, too, of not being able to get their products to market because we underinvest in our ports. And so I think that there's an overlay in these discussions of issues having to do with the economy that transportation, I think, is front and center in. And we think we're prominently at the table, our issues, because I think most people, even many Republicans, understand that we can't cut our way to prosperity when it comes to our transportation system, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, the big component in all this is jobs. I mean, if more people were working today, they'd be paying into the tax system. And then as a result, the deficit would kind of, you know, shrink down the road. What's the game plan here, Ed? Because I know you're dealing with an industry, you're talking about roads, you're talking about highway construction. Can we get back to that debate? Because the last time we had this, I mean, the House, which was full of Republicans, pretty much shut everything down.
Well, that's a big question for us, because clearly the president's idea that we should do some nation building here in America won on election night. And as you know, he's the only president in modern history, at least, who has included transportation as a part of his economic policy. And so, yeah, I do. I have some hope. I have hope because there are a number of Republicans now who are starting to sound a little more open-minded about the fact that if we don't fund our transportation system, our economy will suffer. And so what does that mean? We have to sort of wade through all the rhetoric and really focus like a laser on one important point, which is if we do not raise revenues, and that's, you know, Washington buzzword for tax increases, but it's not tax increases like the ones that the Democrats and Republicans are debating. It's about whether our user-based system, as you know, we pay a fee in the form of a gas tax, whether that's going to be updated to reflect today's economic reality. We are running a 2012 transportation system on a 1993 budget. We have not raised a gas tax since 1993. And you get what you pay for in this country, don't you?
So we're looking at something that was passed 20 years ago, and we're trying to maintain our highways and roads on that?
You got it. And meanwhile, as you and I have spoken, our public transit systems are experiencing incredible growth all over the country, but they're being forced to cut service and cut jobs because of this budget crisis. We need to fund public transit. We need to fund highways. And here's the problem, is it's not just highways and public transit. You know, we have an aviation crisis in this country because we have too long a lines, and we're not funding our air traffic control system fast enough to modernize it. Mm-hmm. And as I said a minute ago, you cannot double exports like the president wants to do by 2015 if you don't fund your ports, because through the ports, almost all exports run through.
Yeah.
And we're not connecting the dots very well in Washington. Meanwhile, I might just add, there is some good news. 86% of ballot initiatives in this election that directed resources to transportation passed. So at the state level, the voters are getting it. The problem is that the representatives they're sending to Washington aren't getting it. And that's really the disconnect we have on these
issues.
Yeah,
I remember, I think the guy's name was John Micah down in Florida. Maybe you know. He was the guy that was holding up the transportation bill, the highway bill, I should say.
Yeah, because he loaded it up with a bunch of ideological things that nobody wanted. It was so controversial, some of his provisions, that he couldn't even get it out of his committee and get it to the floor of the House for a vote. It was delayed. He blamed everyone else for it, but at the end of the day, the MICA bill that he tried to move, it decimated public transit, got rid of what they call the mass transit account, which is the account that funds mass transit in this country. It forced incredible privatization mandates. It had this horrific giveaway in it that you and I spoke about on the air, that gave away Amtrak's food service to private contractors, and if they lost money doing it, the taxpayer was going to hold them harmless. I mean, it was just loaded up with one bad provision after another. And, our goal is to not let them go down that road again, because it will just delay these bills even longer.
Did this guy get reelected?
He did, but he's not going to be chairman of the Transportation Committee anymore because, it looks like he's not going to, because the Republicans have term limits on chairman.
Yeah, that's right.
And so it looks now, I don't want to predict it because it's still subject to a final decision from the Speaker of the House, but it looks like Schuster from Pennsylvania, the son of former Congressman Bud Schuster, is poised to be the next chairman of the Transportation Committee.
What do you know about this guy?
Well, I've known him a fairly long time. He does try to talk to the labor movement about issues where we can find common ground. But the other thing that I think is important about him, he is a guy who I think generally believes that we can't really cut our way to prosperity. And the real question will be, does he want to forge bipartisan consensus on bills the way that committee used to operate over the last 30, 40 years, or whether he's going to continue down the road of putting out these very ideologically driven bills that only have support on his side of the aisle and then have the bill die and then have the nation wait again for transportation measures that we desperately need.
So in summary, Ed, what's your thoughts moving forward? Do you think we're going to finally see Republicans and Democrats working together for the common good of the country?
Well, I'm trying to hold out as much hope as possible. I do think that the president did get a mandate. He won with an overwhelming electoral victory. I do think the middle class was the victor on election night. I do think that tax fairness won on election night. I do think that leaving our entitlement programs off the chopping block won on election night. Again, this is all based on what the voters told the pollsters.
Yeah.
And so the question is, do the Republicans finally agree that they should actually do what the public wants them to do, or are they going to do what their party base wants them to do, which, as you know, is a small minority in this country? And that's going to be the task for the Speaker of the House and for Mitch McConnell in the Senate, who has the power, as you know, to hold everything up, even though he's in the minority. So I'm trying to be optimistic. I do think that this mandate the president got needs to be used intelligently to benefit the American public and to benefit the middle class. And now the cards are in the Republicans' court here to figure out what they're going to do to work with this president to get things done. And we're going to push very hard to make transportation one of those bipartisan areas where we can reach some agreement on.
It's got to be done. There's no question.
It is. It's a desperate situation.
You know, it's funny you bring up Mitch McConnell, and I keep thinking about the time when he said that he wanted to make Obama a one-term president. And they did everything possible. Do you realize where we would be in this country if they did not stop him? I mean, he had some really good ideas.
Oh, no doubt about it. And now, just to make you feel a little more uplifted this morning, I mean, Mitch McConnell was already an obstructionist, but now he's an obstructionist facing reelection with the potential for a Tea Party primary, as we've seen in some other races. So I'm very worried that this is going to force him to be even less cooperative with Harry Reid, the majority leader, and with the president. And that doesn't bode well for getting important bills passed. And it certainly doesn't bode well for making sure that we have tax fairness and that we protect our entitlement programs in this country in a global budget deal, because he's going to be kowtowing to the far right of his party.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't want to be a pessimist. It's too early to be a pessimist, but I'm guardedly optimistic that we can try to, you know, get things done finally and see if the middle class victory on election night doesn't result in things getting done in Washington that helps the middle class, then we're not getting our job done.
Gotcha.
We have to figure out how to get that done.
All right, Ed, we'll button it up there. Great job as usual. You take care. We'll talk to you next month, man.
Thanks as always. Take care.
All right, Ed Witkin on our live line. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the American Legion and the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. Until then, all of you have a wonderful day.
This has been America's Workforce, the voice of working families in Northern Ohio. One solid hour of fact-finding features, in-depth interviews, informative news segments, and practical consumer reports. Tune in every weekday afternoon from 4 to 5 as we stand up for you, your family, and your community. America's Workforce, working hard for working people.